Hello and welcome. This is Colleen O'Grady, the host of the Power Your Parenting Moms to Teens podcast. This is a gathering place for moms of preteens, teens, and young adults. My mission is to first and foremost support and encourage you, mom, so that you can live well and reclaim your life. Two, this show will help you have the best possible relationships with your teens so that you can communicate, motivate, and guide them effectively and actually enjoy them. And third, I will bring you top-notch guests who will share the newest in adolescent research and trends so you can be prepared and aware of what your teens are facing today. Always, you will leave each episode armed with practical parenting tips. Welcome back, everyone, to the 257th episode of Power Your Parenting Moms with Teens podcast. I'm Colleen O'Grady, the host of the show. One of the things that makes parenting so hard today is dealing with everything about screens with your teens. Screens are a daily battlefield for the majority of parents, and especially all you moms who are listening. Our guest today is known as the Screen Time Consultant and has just published her new book, The Screen Time Solution, A Judgment-Free Guide to Becoming a Tech Intentional Family. And of course, in this episode, we discuss what does it mean to be a tech intentional family, and then how do you implement that? Emily Churkin is a nationally recognized consultant who takes a tech intentional approach to addressing screen time challenges. A former middle school teacher, she has been featured for her work in the New York Times, the Washington Post, on the Today Show twice, Good Morning America, Australia Weekend Today, the BBC, NPR, Sirius XM Radio, and numerous parenting websites, blogs, and podcasts. Chuck Norris has quoted her. Emily teaches parenting courses, offers private parent consultations, facilitates professional development training, and provides personalized school presentations built on her tech intentional approach. As a parent to a 12 and 15-year-old, Emily understands deeply the real-life challenges of parenting in the digital age. Emily is also the co-founder of the Student Data Privacy Project, an advocacy group focused on protecting school children's data. Welcome, Emily Churkin.
Thank you, Colleen. Nice to be here.
Yes. Well, the first question that I ask all my guests is if you are a mom, and if so, what are the ages of your kids?
Yes, I'm a mom, and I have a almost 16-year-old son and a 12-year-old daughter.
All right. So you are not only, helping other parents with this, so this topic is, you're living it yourself.
100%. I don't think I could be an expert speaker, consultant, or writer and not also be living and breathing this, because it feels very connected.
Yes. And that's the same for me. I wrote my book, Dial Down the Drama, which is kind of the middle school, high school years when my daughter was in those ages.
Yeah.
And then I wrote Dial Up the Dream when my daughter was from 17 to 25, the young adult years, the confusing young adult years. So I wrote both of those books living it. And there were times I thought I was insane for doing that, but but it makes it very relatable because I'm not just the marriage and family therapist that knows everything. In it.
Yeah. And I think having some humility around the topic, even if we're experts in it, means we're human and real and we struggle too. And I think that's with screen time, especially just normalizing that it's hard for all of us, even those who know a lot about it.
Yes. So you recently wrote a book called The Screen Time Solution, A Judgment-Free Guide to Becoming a Tech Intentional Family. So yeah. I can't wait to dive into that. Tell the moms listening why you wrote the book.
I wrote the book because I felt like there was not a handbook out there for parents about what to do when it comes to the screen time conflict. There's a lot of books out there about all the problems and the bad effects and the scary things. And so that was actually one reason I chose the title to be solution rather than problem, because I think sometimes we get real fixated in all the bad and not about what we can do to be having a more positive impact around the topic. And also, I just kept doing these speaking engagements and people kept asking, like, well, do you have a book? And I thought, yeah, I think it's time to put this down into writing. And I love writing. It's something I've enjoyed my whole life. So it felt like a natural next step in my career.
Oh, that's great. A judgment-free guide. that caught my eye because I think, my goodness, there's so much judgment around social media. So yes. How can parents not be judgmental with this?
Yes. I joke that parenting is the judgiest sport I've ever played because I think there's just, even from day one, you know, like cloth diapering, co-sleeping, feeding, like all of these topics are just ripe for judgment. And today I see screen time as the number one topic for judgment around parenting. And so my hope was that parents could come as they are to this book. It doesn't matter if you've given your kid phone access, they have social media, they're teenagers, there's something in here for everyone. And the idea is just start where you are. There's no such thing as being way too far past the point of being able to do something, you know, and yeah, it can be more challenging when they get older, but I think it doesn't mean we shouldn't try. And so that was the hope, was that parents wouldn't feel judged by this approach, that it would invite them in rather than make them feel guilty or shamed for what they've done.
All right. So I'm going to ask you a question. So you have a 12 and almost 16-year-old. How have you lived this out, this message of screen time with your own kids? What have you learned from your kids?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I feel like my kids are my best teachers. And I was a teacher, classroom teacher for 12 years too. And so I feel like once you're a teacher and a parent, you're always a student. You know, you're always learning. It's interesting because if I'd written this book 5 years ago, I think I wouldn't have had a really good understanding of those sort of tween, early teen years the way I do now. So I'm really grateful that the timing has worked out like this. I often joke with my kids that if I'd been a dentist, we'd eat a lot less sugar. But because I'm the screen time consultant, we just talk about screen time a lot. But at the end of the day, that's actually, I mean, I don't want to say it's an easy solution, but it's a free and really effective solution, which is just the ongoing conversation in the context of a good relationship. You know, I think that I'm not saying I don't fight with my kids. I'm not saying we don't have our conflicts, but just the continual conversation, little sort of drips throughout the day over the years. I mean, again, I don't want anyone to think I just woke up one day and solved everything. And full disclosure, you know, my daughter accidentally got me locked out of my own business email account a couple of weeks ago because she misentered a password too many times, you know, and it locks you out. And so we're learning on the go as parents, and technology changes so rapidly. I mean, we have to be. We have to be nimble about it. And that's hard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. So you talk about being tech intentional. What does it mean to be tech intentional and being a tech intentional family?
Yeah. Well, I came up with this phrase because I kept feeling like I had to say, well, I'm not anti-tech. And I was like, well, what am I? And I thought, well, I'm tech intentional, which to me means using technology and all its forms, right? I mean, it doesn't mean just our phones or just social media, but in a way that enhances, nurtures, and supports ourselves, our families, our children, and in a way that's aligned with our values and avoiding the types of screen time that interfere or delay or cause problems with healthy mental, cognitive, physical, emotional development. So I know that's like a mouthful, but I think generally speaking, it's just starting from a place of curiosity, knowing that we're all in this together. I talk a lot about 80% parenting, meaning we're never going to be perfect. We're never going to hit 100%. That's not possible. So, you know, 80% of the time, are we modeling, living in our values, using technology the way we want? And, you know, some of the rest of that time, we might mess up, and that's opportunities for teaching too.
Yeah. I've said this a lot when I speak. I think parenting right now is harder than it's ever been because of screens and games. And it's just a whole nother thing that parents have to navigate. And I've had guests say, and it's just really true, is, you know, many moons ago, if your kids were home and they were in the rooms, you'd go, oh, they're home and they're safe. But they're no longer safe anymore in their own rooms. It's different.
That's a really good point. And I actually talk a lot about this in the book. I talk about the dichotomy of what's scary versus what's dangerous, because I think a long time ago, and certainly when I was growing up, you know, if your kid was home, for the most part, you felt like they were safe, again, precluding trauma within the family. But it was, you know, you knew where they were, you could see what they were doing. And I think that mindset still exists, but what parents need to learn more about and better understand is that the internet is not designed for children, that social media platforms are not made with children's best interests at heart, that games are designed to be addictive and hold their attention. And so the dangers, you know, while I don't believe in fear mongering, we have to understand, like, well, what's really dangerous and what's just scary? And I hear this a lot from parents, Pew found recently that kidnapping was the number three concern among parents right now, which is really interesting to me because it's still statistically almost non-existent risk. Yet, I think that's partly what parents are experiencing from our own consumption of media and social media and clickbait headlines. We think the external world's more dangerous, and therefore we're keeping our kids inside more, which means they're online more. And paradoxically, then we're not giving kids opportunities to go out in the world, to build resilience and confidence and do things that are scary and unfamiliar, which ironically will help them be more resilient young adults. And so it's kind of, we've got this sort of messy soup of things. And I think intentions are good, but the fallout is problematic, as we see with mental health issues among young people today.
I know every mom out there wants to do the right thing, wants to do their best in terms of screens and all of that. And so many things with parenting, even though we want to do our best, like it's not the best. So what are some of the mistakes that moms make with good intentions that are just not helpful?
That's a great question. I think one of the biggest things that we can do as parents and moms, you know, is not beating ourselves up for what we've done in the past. You know, I think, again, I do notice a lot of times parents get very defensive. I used to joke, I need a sandwich board that says, I'm not judging you, because screen time brings up so many feelings. And so to let that go and say, gosh, I just didn't know that, or I didn't understand that, or I'm embarrassed about my own screen use, or I know that I'm overusing social media as an adult, and it feels hypocritical to try and set limits for my kids. I think the first step is to acknowledge that that's true. And that's okay, because then we can say, okay, and now what do we want it to look like? And again, I mean, I really am a firm believer in conversation as sort of a root of that relationship that we want to have. And owning our own challenges with our kids, especially tweens and teens, I think is so powerful to say, like, you know, I know I nag you a lot about your screen use, and I have to tell you, I'm guilty too. You know, like, I don't feel great when I'm spending too many hours on my own device. So I want you to know this is hard for me too, and I'm working on it, right? I think that disarms kids who also feel defensive. They know we hate it, right? And so just getting to that point, I sometimes refer to that as going backward to go forward, right? Before we can change the rules and establish new limits or whatever it is we're trying to do, we have to kind of go back and say, whoa, we're in this together. This isn't like a combative thing. This is like, we got to do this side by side.
Yeah. So what parental controls do you recommend? Because I have moms always say, what can I do? You know, because they wake up at 3 a.m. and they're on the phone, or what can they do? What can parents do?
Yeah. Well, I have kind of an unpopular opinion about this because not everyone in my field agrees with me, but I actually don't recommend parental controls. And I say that with a little bit of a caveat. You know, for some families, if they have them and they find that they're successful and a helpful tool, fine, don't throw them out. But what I see too often is that most parents come to me with that question because they're hoping it's the magic bullet, the thing that will solve all of the problems that come with social media and screen time. And I am here to tell you there are many reasons why that will never be the case. And number one, our kids are way savvier than we are, just like we were with our parents when it comes to technology. Google is a very easy tool for kids to use to find out how to get the workarounds, and they do it all the time. The other thing is it displaces the relationship piece. I don't think that parental controls can exempt us from the parenting side of it. That's why I say it can be in addition, but it isn't instead of. And, you know, I mean, I have a lot of reasons, but I would also add one more, which is that, you know, the tech industry itself is not designed to be parent friendly. It is much easier for the tech industry to blame parents for bad parenting than it is for them to change their business model to design products that are better for children and families. So it's intentionally designed to set parents up to fail. And so I get pretty angry about that. And a lot of my activism is around that. But I think it's really important that parents know that, that it isn't designed to make your life better or easier. It's designed to lull you into a false sense of security and set you up to fail. So that's the cynical answer. I think a combination of tools can work, right? And I think the first one is the parent relationship.
Mm-hmm. I think why parents want the parental controls is because they're just tired of arguing with their teens all the time. And that arguing seems to hurt that, well, it does hurt their relationship because it's all a struggle. And I've heard stories, and I'm sure you have too, you know, where kids won't let go of their phones and then parents are struggling to try to pull the phone out of their hands and all that stuff.
Yeah. And we never want to get there. I mean, I know it happens, and I'm not, again, not judging parents for whom it has gotten that hard. I think that the answer to me isn't going to be to try to shut it off, because especially for a teenager, right? Again, like if we're talking really little kids, that's a different issue, but also we don't want little kids online that much anyway. So it's a different problem. But I think, again, you know, if it's that point, then to me, when if I were working with a family along that, it would be like, well, then the issue is not the limits right now. The issue is we have to figure out how to repair the relationship and move the conflict away from the screens, which is hard. I mean, I don't, again, presume to say that this is like a quick fix, because parents and kids are all pretty wounded and angry and upset about this. So I think it would be, again, what is it that is so compelling? And getting curious. I use the quote, replace judgment with curiosity a lot. And I think asking teens, you know, what is it that's so compelling about your phone? You know, a lot of kids, especially teen girls with social media, will say, well, I don't want to miss something that, like, what if my friend needs me? What if, and I understand that. And I think it's important we acknowledge that that's a reality for teens, but then to also have a conversation. Okay. So I see that, I hear that, I acknowledge it, but what is it doing to you? Like, how is it impacting your life that you feel like you have to be on all the time? Or are there other ways in which you can support your friend? So again, that side-by-side parenting as opposed to the combative, you know, and again, I am not a licensed mental health professional. I'm a big fan of that. That is a great tool to have in place if you are at a point where conflict is that fraught. But I think it can be in conjunction with some approaches to the screen time piece that are less combative, right? And less sort of from the control. Because how many teens want to be controlled, right? Like, that's the other problem, is the resistance to that idea of you telling me what to do remotely, right? I worry a lot about that surveillance and the erosion of trust that comes, right? At a time when our teens need us more than ever to be able to trust us. So conversations have to happen first.
So I think if a mom was listening, she would say, well, how in the heck would you do that? So how do I go from, okay, here, there you go. There's no parental controls and I don't want to struggle. Like, how do they step out of that?
Yeah, it's a great question. A couple ways. And, you know, I don't always lead with this, because I think, again, parents get really defensive and feel ashamed or judged, but it is to start with your own use, because it's going to be a lot easier to have that conversation with your teen if they see that you're willing to make some changes too. So that can be really small incremental things, like move your phone out of your bedroom. I mean, the number of adults who have phones in their room at night is very, very high. And that is a very easy change. And will be a lot easier to say then to your teen, well, you can have your phone in your room at night, right? Because I'm not doing it either, right? I'm willing to make that change. Alarm clocks are very inexpensive and are not internet connected. You know, there's that. The other strategy that I love to talk to parents about is, again, for any child, but especially valuable, I think, for teens, is living your life out loud. And what I mean by that is narrating what you're doing as you do it as an adult. And again, it can be about anything, but I apply it to screen use. So I'm reaching for my phone. I'm feeling bored. I'm scrolling through Instagram. I just feel like there's no end to this. So we start talking about how it makes us feel. We talk about how it's hard to put down. You know, this is really distracting for me. And I always say that, you know, it's working when your teens start rolling their eyes at you, because we know that the eye roll means they hurt us. And that's good. That's a good sign, I think. And you have to do it constantly. I mean, I think that's it. This isn't a quick fix, and I would much rather parents focus on really small, meaningful change that they can stick to, rather than trying to throw in a big contract or establish, you know, a list of rules that lasts for 2 weeks but fizzle out because no one has the energy to maintain, right? That to me is more valuable in the long term.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. And then they see that you struggle with it too. It's like, oh my gosh, I spent 45 minutes scrolling stupid things last night.
Yeah.
What was I doing?
Yeah. And I feel tired today because of it, right? Like, we can connect it to then how it makes us feel physically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One other thing I might add too, that I imagine a lot of parents listening are also feeling frustrations or confusion about, is how much screen use is happening for school. Because even parents who have very clear rules about screen use, or that the kids are actually doing a pretty reasonable job at home on their phones, are being asked to be online for school, both at school and for homework. And I will say, I spent 12 years as a middle school English teacher, and from 2003 to 2015. And when I left, it was a big issue. And that was 9 years ago. So it has only gotten worse. And the pandemic and remote learning has just thrown gasoline on the fire. So I think that's something that the last 5 years has just dramatically shifted. And so I really encourage parents to again, approaching with curiosity the teachers, because this isn't teachers' fault. I was a teacher. I'm very, very protective of teachers. But teachers are often between a rock and a hard place in terms of what choice and control they have over what they can do in the classroom. And so just to say, like, can you help me understand how much time is my child on screens at school? And, you know, is there a non-screen based option to turn in this homework assignment? So it's going to take some grassroots efforts from parents to push back on that. But I think that's contributing significantly to this problem. It's not just social media and smartphones.
So how do you balance that? How do you balance that school, they're on the computers, and home, they're on their computers?
Yeah. And the thing that makes me so angry from a developmental standpoint is, you know, we're giving kids laptops and iPads for school and then telling them not to get distracted. Well, I have a colleague who says that's like holding an AA meeting in a bar. Like, you can't do that to these children. Like, their brains aren't fully developed. There's no way they're going to not flip over to YouTube. And by the way, YouTube is on most school district computers because they use it in class. So it's really a mess is kind of the the reality right now. And so again, it's going to have to be being aware as a parent, getting involved, asking a lot of questions of your kids, non-judgmental questions. I'm so curious, how much are you on your computer at school? Like, how much do your teachers require you to be on YouTube? Is there an alternative to read this assignment on paper instead of on the screen, right? Like, starting with the questions to get the information. And it varies tremendously, right? From school to school, teacher to teacher. So not everyone is doing it that way, but it is increasingly so that people are online at school.
What strategies work for decreasing, limiting, balancing screen time?
Well, certainly, again, like I said, small incremental change in my mind is better long-term. My TLDR, my too long don't read summary of my entire book is later is better, less is more, relationships first. And, you know, so I always say, like, no parent has ever said to me, oh my gosh, I wish I'd given my kid a smartphone sooner or social media access earlier. Never. Always, 100% of the time, it's the opposite. And so I wish I could take those parents who say that and help them talk to the parents of younger kids who haven't yet hit this so they can hear that. Because I think there's a lot of pressure on parents. You know, right now we know, I think it's like 30% of eight-year-olds have smartphones, eight-year-olds, and it is going
up.
Yep. And, you know, most of those kids also have devices for school. So we're not seeing this problem change. And anything, we're seeing kids getting access younger, which is the opposite of what we want to see.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And again, I think parents feel pressure from their own parenting peers and from their kids saying, well, everyone else has it, right? Like, how many times have we heard that as parents? And how many times did we say that when we were kids? And I just want to normalize, yeah, a lot of kids have it. That doesn't mean all kids should have it or need it, right? And it's okay to say no as a parent. I think sometimes we feel like we don't want to drive our kid to some sort of a mental health crisis by saying no. On the other hand, kids need boundaries. Like, that's what healthy living includes. And so, you know, it's, I don't think it needs to be draconian, but how do we have that conversation and help our children understand why? And that's a big part of my book as well, is the helping parents explain to kids why I'm making these decisions, why I'm being restrictive or setting limits on screens is because, I mean, they're literally designed to hook and hold your attention. They're literally designed to tap into your neural pathways and hold you on. And that's not fair. It's not your fault. It's the screen's fault, you know? And so that's another way to, for parents too, is to detach a little bit and say, it's not my kid that's being bad. It's my kid's neural pathways being hijacked and manipulated. So when we're upset at them, we have to remember that it's not about willpower. It's not that our kid's being, you know, bad. And, you know, I don't like that dichotomy anyway, but we have to remember that this is designed that way. It is designed to intentionally manipulate them. And that kids don't like that. That's why I think it's so powerful to teach them about.
So yeah, I think often like parents see the tip of the iceberg of their teen.
Yes.
And they see the, kind of the angry teen like, no, give me my phone. And I love what you say about curiosity. And I love curiosity also because it's so much bigger than them just being on the phone. That they're being mean to you or disrespectful because they're being on later.
Yeah.
And so if you get curious, there's a book that I really enjoyed called Behind the Screens or something like that. Because it, you really got into like the social life and what that feels like for the teens.
Yeah.
And the social dilemmas that they feel online.
Yes. And it's true that that is how kids are communicating, is through texting and social media DMs. And that, whether we like it or not, that is true. And I hear a lot from parents who say, my kid is going to be left out, And I have a couple of thoughts about that. One is, you know, they're going to be left out far worse if they get social media. I mean, we have to establish that that reality is very true. They'll be included in some things, but boy, they get to see magnified all the other stuff they're left out of. The other thing is we have to, again, we have to push back a little bit on schools and extracurriculars and sports and coaches who use social media to communicate. This is another problem parents are up against. You know, a parent could say, no, we don't use social media and we're actually fine with it. But then a coach or an after school teacher says, oh, well, that's how we coordinate all our practices. We can push back. I mean, I think this is an important conversation we have to be having. And, you know, I think the other thing, and I have a funny solution that I've been using with my own daughter, who's 12 and a half. We share my phone. And I jokingly say, save a tween, share a phone, because, and it is not awesome all the time. I will be the first to admit that being in a sixth grade group chat is like mind numbing. And I will say, because it's an Apple product and I have an Apple computer and an iPad, she can use the iPad to text friends. So from a communication standpoint, if that's really what I want to support her in, she can do that on the iPad, feel like she has a little independence, but knowing full well that it's my phone number, I can see everything. And people will say, well, isn't that spying? I go, well, what do you think the internet is? I mean, nothing is private on the internet. And I certainly have more important things to do than sit and read every single, you know, thing. But it has provided us such valuable teachable moments, you know, like when there's a friend drama, because how do those blow up these days? Over text. It's not in person. And so, you know, text firing back and forth, I can sit next to her on the couch and say, I can see you're upset. I can see there's something going on. You need to pause for a second. Let's talk about this. What do you want the outcome to be? I also ask her if she wants my advice, because I don't want to just offer it without asking. But it's been a very powerful learning experience for me as a parent to kind of see what the conflicts are, but also to be able to use it as a teaching tool, right? To me, that's the parental quote unquote control, right? And I don't even like that word. It's the parental mentoring piece of this that I think is so important. And I have the luxury of working from home, and she goes to a school that has a no phone policy, which is another thing parents can advocate for. 100% support, no phones at school at all. So it makes it a little easier for us, right? She can't take it to school anyway. But I know that's not always going to be the case. So for now, that's what we're doing. And it's working for now.
I mean, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. And, you know, the responsibility of having, I mean, phones are not cheap, right? You know, and walking around with a $400, $500, or $600 device in your pocket is not great. There's a lot of reasons to not have it. And the other thing is the skill building that comes by asking her to be independent without the device. You know, this is a huge part of development, especially in those tween teen years, is how do I exist in the world? How do I get myself from A to B? How do I trust myself to solve the problems and not rely on Google or an Uber app or whatever it is, you know? And I think that is directly connected to some of the mental health stuff kids are dealing with right now, is that they don't know they can do it because they haven't had to. They haven't been pushed out of their comfort zones. And we're guilty as parents of providing them the tools, thinking it's going to be making things more convenient, to which I say, for whom? You know, for whom are we giving our kids phones? Is it for us and our convenience, or is it for our kids? And that's a hard one.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of moms can be frustrated because they're like, you're just always on screens. Like you're not doing real things. You're not in the world. Like you're not doing things real life or what, offline. So what can parents do, say? I know it's a conversation, but can you give us some examples of what they can say to get like kids in real life?
Yeah. My first question is going to be, right, are the parents doing it too? Are parents going and doing things outside of work or online time themselves? Because what we do is what they do, right? Even as teenagers, they have to see us doing it too. That being said, that doesn't mean you need to sign up for like a theater class, you know, band practice, but making sure that we name and prioritize offline time for us too, and that they see it and hear it. The other thing is just to do sort of an overview. You know, I think parents, I want them to fixate less on the how much screen time is too much and, you know, what parental controls, and more on the question of, do I have a strong communication relationship with my child? And do I know what they're doing online? Because it's actually less about the total time and more about the ability to answer those second two questions. Because kids are online. And even if we limit it at home, they're online at school. So having those conversations just, again, ongoing. And then looking at the big picture, does my child also get their homework done without a big fight? Does my child participate in a activity outside of school? One minimum, I would say, like informal or formal. And there's benefits to both, right? I don't want to say you have to be in an expensive soccer league, right? Like going out and hanging in the neighborhood with friends is important for development. So looking at that, looking at sleep, sleep is a low-hanging fruit. You know, if we can prioritize sleep, and that's a strategy for parents to think about too, is like talking to your kid about the importance of sleep, you can avoid mentioning phones 100%. Because if we're just talking about sleep and what we need to do to prioritize it, obviously phones are a part of that. But if we make it more about why sleep's important for your brain, we don't have to talk about the phone, right? We can just say, how can I help you prioritize sleep? I'm noticing you're so tired in the morning. And I know that sleep is going to have such a positive effect on your mood and energy and focus, right? So that's another way of like, if we can de-escalate the power of the device, but still get the benefit. I think of it like when our kids are toddlers and we go, do you want to put your shoes on or do you want me to put your shoes on? Where the outcome is both the same, we get what we want, but we approach it with a choice. So those are a few ideas. I got lots of them, but those are a few.
What I've seen after COVID is that kids who were a little bit more introverted kind of got stuck in the online world because it was hard to kind of initiate.
Yes.
You know, and it was just more comfortable to stay at home and just be on screens. And one thing I think is that just for parents to kind of be aware of that is that if you have an extroverted kid, this is less of a problem. But if you have kind of more of a medium to introverted, then it's just easier to be online versus hanging out with kids in the real world.
Yeah. And you know, someone said this to me a couple of weeks ago that tech is designed to be frictionless, right? To make our lives easier. But that's actually a problem because it's in the friction that learning happens. Mm-hmm. And so our iPads and phones and social media make our lives really easy in a lot of ways. And so kids are going to pick that. I mean, I don't blame them, especially those introverted kids who don't want to go out. And I don't dispute that there's anxiety and fear about the world. I know kids are struggling. I also really want to encourage parents to think about what are the benefits of pushing your children a little bit, not like shoving them over, but pushing them a little bit beyond their comfort zone so that they can start to rebuild some of those skills. And I hear this from teachers all the time that after remote learning, you know, kids were coming back into the classroom, you know, eighth graders in eighth grade bodies with sixth grade emotional skills, sixth grade communication skills, sixth grade, you know, how to friendship skills. So to me, I think we have to assume that most kids, we sort of need to subtract 2 years from that social skill set. I don't think that's like learning loss in the same way. I think it's very easy for kids to make those skills up, but we have to give them opportunities to do that. And it might be just role-playing at home for a while, right? If it is really an introverted kid and they really are afraid of those situations. It's another reason why I wish phones were not allowed at school, especially in middle school, because they are an easy escape for kids who are afraid of the social dynamics. And I mean, I vividly remember seventh grade and we did not have phones and social media. And it was 100% awkward and terrifying and scary to go to school. But it's also where I learned how to do it. And so we're not doing them any favors by letting them escape from that 100% of the time. I get it. Sometimes we do that. But where are we giving them opportunities to practice and build those skills? I think that's a very important thing for parents to look for, opportunities to do that.
Yeah. I've also seen it with guys who, you know, like to play video games.
Yeah.
They may not be the star athlete. So it's easier to kind of just be in the video games and they just have fits if when the parents want to take them to practice. But I've seen some really good parents kind of push through that and get him into the practice. And that was really good. I mean, to be honest, it's easier for parents to kind of cave.
Totally. Totally. And again, we're asking kids to be courageous and push out of comfort zones. We're asking parents to do that too. And that means admitting we're not always right. We've screwed up. We do our screens too much too. And being a good parent means pushing you a little bit out of your comfort zone to help you grow. That's my job as a parent. And it's hard. It's humbling. I used to joke, I taught middle school for 12 years and parenting is almost as hard as teaching middle school. You know, like, it is not an easy job. But I always say too, no one got into parenting because they heard it was easy, right? Like,
Right. I think young parents think, well, I'm going to do it different from my mom. Yes. And so it will be easier, but then it's never easier.
No, and it's just a new different. It's a new problem, right? And, you know, technology didn't exist a generation ago in the same way, or even 10 years ago. It's totally different. I do think parents today are up against a much bigger boulder than our parents were. And, you know, That's not an excuse, but it does help explain why it feels harder today.
So in chapter 3, the title is Aligning Screen Use with Family Values. Can you tell us a little bit about what you mean by that?
Yeah. I mean, again, I think this is the approach that steers away from sort of top-down control focus to, does this reflect the life that we want? Does this reflect the way that we have raised you as children? Does this reflect the values we have as a family? And I find that it's a helpful starting point for parents. And again, it takes us out of the fight about the screen and into the solution-oriented approach, which is like, what matters to us, you know? And values can be a loaded term, right? And it can be faith-based, doesn't need to be, but it could also be just what's important to us. And you can have this conversation even with really little children. I always just say, I have some prompts in the book about how you can talk about it, but like to say to a family with 5 and a 3-year-old, like ask them, what would happen if an alien landed in our living room and looked around? What would that alien think is important to our family, right? You know, just sort of putting it in an example that helps children understand. Or if we had a day off and we could do anything we wanted as a family, what would we choose? You know, and then to back that up. And if we would all choose to go hiking, then maybe we value being outdoors and, you know, prioritizing exercise, whatever it is. Like there's literally hundreds of values we could choose from. But then what we can do is we fold the screen use into that. So rather than making it, here are the rules about screen time, we're saying, you know, we agreed that communication was a value in our family, but when we're all sitting on our devices at the dinner table, we're not communicating with one another. So can dinner be an example where we live that value, where we focus on the talking part, right? Maybe it's 10 minutes. And honestly, sometimes it's the parents who are the ones on their phones at the dinner table, right? Like I think, again, we throw kids under the bus a lot for this, but parents have some work to do around that as well. So, you know, no judgment. We can just do better when we know better. So that's a starting point.
All right. So a teen says, well, one of my values is friends. So that's why I'm on the phone.
Great. Yeah. Oh, and we'll definitely get that coming up. So friendship, what does it mean to be a good friend? Then we unpack that a little bit more. So showing up for your friend might be, I'm available to be texted with or on FaceTime or whatever it is that they need to reach me. But what else does it mean? You know, if your friend's having a hard time, is that all they want is a text? Do you need to like have face-to-face communication with them? What does it mean to show up for a friend? And is it important that you take care of yourself so you can show up for your friend, right? Like I would just play it out. You know that you're going to get those teen-tween answers because again, that's developmentally normal for them. But then to not take the bait, right? Like that's so hard about parenting teens is not taking the bait when they offer it, right? I have a great colleague who's a parent educator who says you don't have to accept the invitation to every fight you're invited to.
Well, that's good. What you just did is what I wanted you to do, which is how you would do that, like giving them kind of a script. So
yes,
you're just helping expand their reality where like they wouldn't even think about, oh, I could go over to her house. Things that are maybe not obvious, that are obvious to us.
Yes. So, and you know, as a therapist, to use the phrase, tell me more. Tell me more about that. What would that look like? What would that feel like? And, you know, again, this is for us as parents to pull out of the defensive, because as soon as you see your kid write down that my number one value is chatting online with my friends, okay, what is it behind that? They want to poke us with that provocative statement, ignore it, move past it. They're telling us friendship's important. Great. What does friendship mean to them? What does friendship look like? And flip the script, right? Have them say, well, what do you need for support, right? What do you need when your friends show up for you? And honestly, especially with teens, there may be some compromise. It may be, okay, I think we need to agree that your phone is out of the bedroom at night because of the sleep, right? Go back to what we were just saying, like because of sleep. But I hear you saying that you feel it's really important to connect with your friends in the morning before school. So what would that look like for you? What do you feel like would be a reasonable time for that, assuming you need to do XYZ in the morning, right? Giving kids some agency over that and letting them tell you what they think would be a good plan, of course, it's not always going to work. And of course, they're going to be over-exaggerating sometimes. But actually, we've got to give them credit. I do believe that if we meet them partway and we disarm ourselves to not be judgmental and defensive, I think they will also find their way towards us a little bit too. So I always say it's like parenting is like zigzag, right? You know, it's like we're constantly sort of ping-ponging back and forth between, did we do it too much? Not enough. Too much conflict, not enough conflict. So, you know, hope it all averages out in the end.
So I just want to comment on the kind of questions you're asking and just make this very concrete. Is it's very easy for a mom that our questions are more judgmental than really kind of open-ended, and where there really is a space in us that wants to hear their answer versus we want them to say our answer.
Exactly. So I wonder, I notice, I'm curious. Those are all prompts that we can use as parents. I wonder how it makes you feel to stay up so late on your phone. I wonder how you need support from me as a parent when it comes to prioritizing sleep. I notice when you're up really late at night, you're grumpy the next morning, right? So those are all disarming phrases that take the judgment out. And that's hard. That's our work as parents, and it's hard. But those help. I find I use those quite a bit when I'm feeling
So cranky. It's, I wonder, I notice, and you said, what was the other
I'm
one?
I'm curious about.
Okay, right. Right.
Yeah, or whatever iteration of that feels comfortable.
Yes. One more question, I guess, is you have chapter 4 is putting skills before screens.
Yeah.
Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, this definitely connects to a lot of what I see with the school screen use. And I use the example of a family I worked with at one point, and the daughter had all her curriculum, all her textbooks, everything was on an iPad. She was a sixth grader. And, you know, she came and I was working with her as a tutor at that point. And she was, you know, downloading a reading assignment, downloading Notability to record her answers. She's like toggling between all these screens. And then she cut and paste the first question, went to Google, copied it, clicked on the first search result, popped it into the document. And I go, whoa, do you know what plagiarism is? And she goes, yeah, my teachers don't really read it anyway. And I said, well, what about rephrasing it, at least putting it in your own words? And she goes, well, takes too long. And I said, well, what do you mean? She goes, well, I don't know how to type.
Oh.
And I was like, what? Why do you have an iPad for school if you don't know how to type? And so it was this aha moment for me of like, we are doing this backwards. Again, I'm not anti-technology. I think there is a time, a place, and a reason to have it in education. But you don't give children computers and iPads without teaching them typing skills. I mean, to me, that's sort of like a very, very basic starting point.
Right.
And so I would add to that digital citizenship, media literacy, good research skills, helping kids understand the difference between misinformation, disinformation, trusted sources. That is absolutely critical. And honestly, I think is directly correlated to a healthy democracy. And I don't think that that's happening entirely the way it should be. And again, not through the fault of teachers. Teachers are strapped. But why do kindergartners need iPads to learn how to read? They don't. And again, the exception to this, and I always say this, is if you have a child with a diagnosed learning disability for whom that is a required learning tool, I am not speaking about that example, right? Like that's the exception, not the rule. Just because one kid needs glasses in the classroom does not mean the entire class needs glasses, right? So that to me is a huge part of it. So the skills have to be there first. So going back to my daughter and sharing a phone, she wanted to walk to a friend's house, probably about 10 blocks away. She was 11 at the time. And I said, okay, how do you get there? I'm not giving you a phone to walk. Do you know how to get there? And this is most parents' hearts are beating right now going, oh my gosh, I don't know. And you know what she did? And this was fascinating to me. She pulled up Google Maps and she showed me in the street view how she would walk. And she said, okay, I'm going to go down that hill where we went sledding that one winter and then past my brother's friend's house. And then I'm going to go to the signal here and hit the button so I cross the street safely. And I said, great, go, you're done. Like I could believe that she knew how to get there. Now, that's a combination of technology-based parenting, right? Like old school, we may have pulled out a map. But to me, the skill of understanding her situational awareness, right? Of knowing, even if she didn't know the street names, she had context for it. She had a directional sense. A lot of kids have no clue. I mean, even adults, we rely heavily on our maps, right? And so how can we make sure that kids are getting those opportunities to build those skills before we hand over the devices? So that's one of many. I mean, I can think of lots of examples, but it's really a good question to sort of think about ourselves as parents. Again, tech is designed to be easy, but I don't think it necessarily is a good thing that it is for children. Yeah.
We could talk all day, but yes. I'm going to ask you, what's one last advice that you have for the parents?
Oh, great question. I think be kind to yourself and know that you're not alone in this, that this really is, I think, the number one parenting challenge of today's parents' generation. And I'm an optimist. I think the pendulum is going to swing back in the other direction. And so it isn't about being perfect. It's about being good enough as a parent. That's why I like to talk about 80-20, you know, 80% of the time is good enough, right? Mm-hmm. So, and to hang in there.
Yes, moms, we need to hang in there.
Yes, exactly.
All right. So The Screen Time Solution, a judgment-free guide to becoming a tech intentional family. I'm sure they can get that book anywhere books are sold.
That is true. Yes, it is buyable on the big platforms. And the, you know, I always encourage independent bookstores to go in and ask too, so they can order it anywhere.
Yeah. So. And so how can moms contact you?
Yeah, well, the irony is not lost on me that I have social media and a website. but for me, again, that's a tool. So my website is thescreentimeconsultant.com. I post a lot of blog articles about parenting and screen time. If you're on my mailing list, you get those weekly. I don't spam people, but that's a good way to keep tabs on what I'm doing. I do public speaking and parent education, so I come to schools. I'm offering some sliding scale price talks for different budgets of different communities. Those are also on my website. I do one-on-one coaching. My book is available. And yeah, I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn and Facebook, and I have some help with that, so I don't spend all my time doing it, but I am there.
So does your 12-year-old ever tell you, Mom, you need to get off the screens?
Yeah. And I'm not going to lie, I've had her help me with some videos too, because she's, again, way savvier than I am. So she knows how to do, you know, transitions, and it's all about that, right? But yeah, and that's humbling too. When our kids call us out, we have to be able to say, whoops, thank you. You're right. I'm working on it.
Well, thank you so much, Emily. This has been great.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. This concludes this week's episode of Power Your Parenting, Moms with Teens podcast. If this podcast has been helpful, I would absolutely love it if you could go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. This makes it easier for other moms like you to find the support and encouragement they need. Also, my award-winning best-selling books, Dial Down the Drama, Reducing Conflict, Reconnecting with Your Teenage Daughter, and my newest release book, Dial Up the Dream, Making Your Daughter's Journey to Adulthood the Best for Both of You. You can find both of these books wherever books are sold. And you can find other great resources and contact me at ColleenO'Grady.com. And that has 2 L's and 2 E's.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.